Welcome to The Power of Stories, a podcast by women, about women, and for women. Their voices and their stories. I am Sharon Catherine D'Agostino, a passionate advocate for the empowerment of women and girls everywhere, and the founder of sayitforward.org.
And I'm Yodit Kifle-Smith, a creative dedicated to making sure the voices and stories of women are heard. I have the privilege of working with Sharon on sayitforward.org to do just that. In this podcast, you will meet courageous women from around the world whose unique path to empowerment will leave you encouraged and inspired.
We are thrilled to be kicking off season 3 of the Power of Stories podcast, and especially excited to welcome Ana Laura Araya joining us from Costa Rica for this episode. Ana Laura is the co-founder of Soy Niña. She has worked in nonprofit organizations and private foundations since she finished college. Currently, she is finishing a certificate degree in nonprofit management from Harvard Extension School. Ana Laura is very passionate about the rights of girls. Thank you so much for being with us today, Ana Laura.
Thank you so much, Yodit and Sharon. It's an honor to be here.
We're so excited to talk with you and to have you join us in launching season 3 of the Power of Stories podcast. So I'm sure our listeners would love to know more about this organization that you co-founded, Soy Niña.
We are almost 6 years old, and we work to empower young girls starting at age 6. Many organizations work to empower girls starting at age 10 or 12, but we decided to start very early. One of the first psychologists that worked with Soy Niña and myself, we had worked with an organization that worked with children in early childhood, like 0 to 5. And we had this mindset that the earlier you start, the better. We even have had people say, can you come and give a workshop for 3-year-olds, you know, on gender equality? We haven't done that yet, but you can go as early as, you know, 3 and 2. There's a lot of studies that have been done that say that a girl's self-esteem starts to go down after 8. Like you're feeling pretty confident, and then around 8, you start losing that confidence around 10. So that's what we decided to start at that age. And it can be a challenge because nobody else is doing it, but it's also like something that makes us very proud. So we start with first grade. We start with girls that sometimes don't know how to read or write. And we work through a girls club. So the girls come on a weekly basis, and we spend 2 hours in each session. It's facilitated by a psychologist or a social worker with the help of volunteers. And during this time, we do games, we do theater, we do think tanks, all these kind of fun activities with the girls. And it's a safe space where they can, you know, share what they're feeling. All the girls that we work with, they live in vulnerable communities where there's a lot of drug trafficking and violence in their homes and parents that are in jail. So some of the girls, they have a lot of brothers and sisters. And when they come, they just want to be listened to. They want to say, oh, like, I got a new toy, or I have a cat, or, you know, they want to tell you the story. And sometimes they don't get listened to in their families. So we worked through this club. We started with first through third grade, but now the girls have started growing. And now we work all the way through 9th grade. So we have 170 girls enrolled in the program and actively participating weekly. We work in 3 communities, and each community has 3 groups, one for first through third grade, one for 4th through 6th grade, and one for 7th through 9th grade. And it's been really great. And that's what we do. We do a little bit of other things like family workshops and things like that. But that's our main program, the Girls Club.
You have been for a long time just a passionate advocate for the rights of girls. What in your own life inspired that passion?
It's very interesting because it came naturally, and it wasn't until a couple of years ago that I asked myself, why am I so obsessed with protecting girls? What happened in my childhood? What did I live? Was I a victim of sexual abuse? Did something happen? Like, how was my adolescence? I haven't figured it all out yet, but I have discovered some things about my childhood that maybe should not have happened. And I didn't discover this when I was young. I discovered this as an older woman. I think I had low self-esteem. I lived in Costa Rica until I was 12. And then my parents took me to the United States. And I don't think they knew how to manage my emotions very well. I think I had a depression at 12. And I don't think they supported me as they could have. But because they didn't know, I think every parent does what they can with the skills that they have. And they called me ungrateful a lot. Instead of asking, like, how do you feel? What's wrong with you? What's going on? I didn't feel very pretty during, like, my, 11, and it's an awkward age. I mentor some girls and that are 16 and 11, and I always tell them, like, that's such a weird age to be going through. And now that we have Soy Niña and we tell girls, like, all the time, like, you're so pretty, you're so intelligent. I wish I had somebody that had told me that, or I wish I had somebody that told me, like, all your emotions are valid. If you are feeling sad, it's okay to be sad. We don't need to cover that up, or nobody needs to tell you what you are not, what you're feeling or what you're not feeling. You know, I wish somebody had told me that earlier.
But what are those internal lies that you believe?
Sometimes I started Soy Niña almost 6 years ago, and I think it's amazing and I'm very proud of myself, but sometimes I compare myself to other women that have started their own initiatives and maybe have gotten bigger grants or maybe have done bigger events. And then I think, like, I should be more like them. I don't appreciate my essence. I'm like, they're good at this and I'm good at that.
Many women and many of the guests who have been on this podcast, they talk about harshly judging themselves. But you're raising an interesting and different point, which is about comparison. How do you encourage girls to not compare themselves to others?
That is a great question. We just say it like it is. I volunteer every week. So I just come and help the facilitator with other volunteers. Many times the facilitators say to the girls, you're not supposed to compare. But one thing that I didn't know is that each person or each girl, each of us has something so unique that is what makes us special and is what makes us beautiful. And we can't be perfect at everything and we shouldn't compare, but it's like so natural. I think that once you discover that it's that essence that makes you unique, I tend to be like very honest and, you know, like people, sometimes my mom says, you're such an open book. You don't need to tell people your whole story. But then I meet people like me that are an open book and I'm like, oh, but see, there are people like me. And maybe my mom doesn't like it, but I'm starting to think like that's why people like me, because I'm very honest and I'm very sincere. And it's like learning that some things that others might not like about us really might be great. And that, yeah, we shouldn't compare because everybody has different talents. Everybody has different qualities. And we talk about this with the girl, points of improvement, you know, where, you know, I'm not patient or I'm not this. Like we always ask the girls, where can you improve? Because we're not perfect. Like nobody's perfect.
You are based right now in Costa Rica, but you were in the States. So what was that journey of returning back home?
Well, I moved to the States and then I honestly felt in my heart that I wasn't going to live my life to the fullest if I stay there. So I was always trying to go back. Like when I was in college, I just landed for like a 2-week vacation and I told my parents, I'm staying for 6 months. I want to stay here. And I did. And then like when I finished college, I came for a bit. So I was always kind of like back and forth. But I wanted to move here in Costa Rica like for long term. And I finally did 10 years ago. And it was a little bit, you know, interesting because some of my parents' friends were saying, like, you're not going to adapt to Costa Rica. Like, we'll throw you a welcome party when you're back. And, you know, when I bought a car, when I first got here 10 years ago, I think my grandfather told the car guy, like, oh, she's just going to try it out, see how she likes Costa Rica. But I knew I was going to live here. I have really enjoyed it. I'm so grateful for everything that I learned and lived in the United States. And I made the best friends ever. And I go there because my parents are still there. But it was a heart thing. It was a gut thing. It was like my intuition always said, like, you don't belong here. You belong where you were born. I really like nature. And here, you know, I live like in a tropical paradise. So yeah, it's been great. I think this is like the place that I want to live for the rest of my life.
you knew what was best for you. How do you absolutely listen to your heart when other people are telling you other things that they think you should do?
Fortunately, I think the older you get, the less people tell you what you should do. It's like the older you get, the more people are like, oh, they know what they're doing, you know? So fortunately, I just quiet down people with like, okay, she lives here. You know, some of my family members would say comments like, when you go visit, don't you want to stay back? Don't you want to go back to the States? So I think like everybody accepted it and is very happy. I'm a firm believer that your heart always knows the answer. And in my case, how do I connect with that answer is honestly when I am in a quiet place and when I am in hopefully nature, because sometimes like I work a lot and I do a lot of things during the day. And sometimes like even in the car, I'm listening to a podcast. So I try to sometimes say, no, I need a pause. I need to like not listen to anything, not listen to anybody. And just like, I know the answer, but just think it more thoroughly, because sometimes we're in a rush and we don't have time to just be and just think. So that's also why I try to do hiking and go to the beach where I can, you know, disconnect from technology and connect more with myself.
Were there times in your life where you felt like you would have done something different?
I think there are so many things in our lives and everybody's lives that we say, I would have done this, I would have done that, but then we wouldn't be here. So I don't know if I can say I would have done anything different. There is like an internal resentment with my family for taking me to the United States that I think I still have to work on, because I wonder what my life would be if I had never left. And of course, there are so many wonderful things, but I'm not alone. Like everybody nowadays, where everybody moves for jobs and everybody was born in a place and moved to another, you know. So I know that this is probably something that many people have felt, but I don't think I would go back. But of course, there are many situations where if I had known, even if I had followed my heart more, I would have moved to Costa Rica sooner, honestly. I listen to people and I listen to people say, why wouldn't you want to live in the United States?
Yeah.
And I knew that I wasn't meant to be there, but I didn't listen to myself until I did.
So what prompted you then to listen to yourself when you finally did?
Time, just time, letting time. And my heart kept saying it. My heart kept saying it. It's like, if your heart says it and says it and says it, then it's probably true. I just felt like if I stayed in the US, I wouldn't live as fully as I could somewhere else. I felt like I was meant to be doing something bigger.
And you started Soy Niña in Costa Rica, or did that idea originate while you were still in the States?
I started Soy Niña here in Costa Rica because I had worked in a very similar organization in the States. And when I moved to Costa Rica 10 years ago, I said, I want to work in something just like that. I'm going to look for it. I worked in something else. And then years started going. And then I realized that there was nothing. There was nothing like that organization I had worked in Atlanta. There was nothing to preventing pregnancy, like directly. And I started telling people, and people started saying, why don't you just start a nonprofit from zero? It was very hard because I never in a million years could have imagined myself starting something or being an entrepreneur, or it takes a lot of work, a lot of effort to, you know, to start a nonprofit and to continue it. Basically, now that you say it, I was inspired by a nonprofit from the US. And sometimes I do think that, like, so I wonder what if I hadn't gone to the US, but then if I hadn't gone to the US, maybe I wouldn't have gotten inspired by this nonprofit that exists there, because there are so many girls serving organizations in the United States, but there were none in Costa Rica.
So given that you started something that was quite unique, did you face any resistance, or was it a very open-hearted acceptance of the work that you were setting out to do?
I think a lot of people face resistance. There was a woman that I met her, and I had heard about her because she knew about fundraising and nonprofits. And I said, oh, I've been meaning to talk to you because, you know, I want to start a nonprofit. And she just looked at me with like a mean look. And she said, why? There are so many nonprofits. Why do you want to start a nonprofit? You know that if you go to China and you want to start a nonprofit, you have to go to the government and they'll tell you what else is there, and they won't let you start unless it's like a very, very, very unique idea. What do you want to do? What's your nonprofit about? And I said, I want to start a nonprofit to prevent teenage pregnancy. And honestly, she just kept quiet. She just was like, oh, she probably thought I was going to start a nonprofit to save the turtles in Costa Rica or something, that there are many, right? Not enough, but there are others. And then I bumped into her like 3 years later, because we work in urban communities in San Jose, and there's a need in rural areas, but we are not there yet. We haven't gotten the funding to grow and everything. And I bumped into her and she's like, oh, I see that you're doing great, but you need to be in another province. Like, you need to be in the rural areas. Always focusing on the negative. And those comments, they like encouraged me. There was also a woman that we asked for funding at the beginning. And she said, you're only going to work with the girls for 2 hours a week. That's it. And you're going to change their lives. And I just didn't say anything, but I was like in shock that she said that. And now I think like 2 hours where the girls don't, you know, witness violence in their homes, 2 hours where they get listened to, where they get a healthy snack. For me, that was the resistance. But for one person that says that, I've had 9 people that say, this is amazing. So, you know, I just try to not think about that, or hopefully those people will feel kind of bad if they listen to this podcast.
And your passion for encouraging girls to find their voice, to know that they have a voice and to use it. So how would you encourage other women and girls to confidently use their voice and claim their power?
What I would tell all of you is, you know, to judge less anyone that's young. Like, I was just a woman deliver and Malala said, just because you're little doesn't mean that your voice is not important. I remember that. In Spanish, there's a word called adultocentrismo, which is we focus on adults, and, you know, everybody that's above 18 knows what they're talking about. And we don't listen to kids enough. We don't listen to young girls. We don't think that their opinion really matters. And don't think that just because you were raised some way or you think that that's best for that girl, don't think that she may not know what's best for her. And let them pick out their clothes and pick out what their hobbies, and don't force anything into them, you know, and embrace what is unique about them. Like, if they want to wear something different or express themselves in a different way, like, support it, because honestly, that's going to give them confidence. We just need to let people be who they're meant to be. And everybody knows their essence at the heart.
Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today. You know, whenever we ask each of our guests this question, it continues to surprise me that the answers can be so unique. But I love that you've, you know, encouraged us to give young girls agency. They are human beings with minds that can make decisions and that can know their voice without even us telling them that they have a voice. And so thank you so much for the work that you do in inspiring and encouraging girls. And to our listeners, thank you for being with us for 2 seasons going on 3. And thank you for making the time to listen to this episode of the Power of Stories podcast.
I add my deepest thanks to you for being with us, for your candor, and for your beautiful advice about how we can help empower and encourage girls. Yodit, thank you again and again and again for the initial idea that we should start these podcasts. It's been a great 2 seasons, and I'm excited about the 3rd. And we send out huge thanks to Lisa DeJavine, who from the beginning has been the co-producer and editor of the Power of Stories podcast. And Alara, we like to ask you if there's anything you would like to leave our listeners with.
Thank you so much. I'm just inspired by both of you. I love the questions, and I love knowing that so many people around the world, so many women around the world will listen to this. So I would just like to thank everybody for their time, and especially thank you too. Thank you.
And to our listeners, we invite you to visit sayitforward.org. a place where you are welcome to share 1 or more stories about your unique path to empowerment. Or you can read the stories of other women and girls. This is Sharon Catherine D'Agostino
and Yodit Kifle-Smith signing off for now, and hoping you'll join us for our next episode of the Power of Stories podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, we do hope you'll give us a review and recommend the Power of Stories to a friend.
And lastly, we want to remind you of the power of your story.